Welcome to Life, Liberty, Reason. I'm James Elias. Thank you for joining my journey through the history of philosophy. Each week, we'll explore the ideas of men in history who have defined the way we think. The sources for the program can be found in the description below the player on Blog Talk Radio. This week, we'll be discussing one of the most influential philosophers of the Enlightenment. His name was René Descartes, and he epitomized the Renaissance's interest, its newfound interest, in epistemology. He really wanted to answer the question, how do we know? Though his answers to these questions have been largely disproven, disregarded, or forgotten, his approach in philosophy has been upheld, making him the father of modern philosophy. Descartes came to ask the question, how do I know, in a very salient and influential way. He basically thought, man, I've made all these errors throughout my life. I've thought I've known the truth. I've been so confident in my ideas, only to find out later that I was wrong. How do I know that the stuff I know right now isn't true? How do I know it's true or false? I need to find some kind of way to obtain real knowledge, to know that what I know is actually true. In other words, how can I obtain certainty? Descartes wrote one book called 21 Rules for the Direction of the Mind, wherein these are some of his most important rules. Rule number 4, quote, "There is a need of a method for finding out the truth. So blind is the curiosity which mortals are possessed that they often conduct their minds along unexplored routes. As well might a man burning with unintelligent desire to find treasure continuously roam the streets seeking to find something that a passerby may have chanced to drop. Yet this is the way in which most chemists, many geometricians, and philosophers, not a few, prosecute their studies. It is very certain that unregulated inquiries and confused reflections of this kind only confound the natural light and blind our mental powers. By method, I mean certain and simple rules, such that if a man observe them accurately, he shall never assume what is false as true, and will never spend his mental efforts to no purpose, but will gradually increase his knowledge, and so arrive at a true understanding of all that does not surpass his powers." Unquote. We need a method, says Descartes. We need a method for gaining knowledge, such that... we're not wasting our time. We're not like some jackass who's trying to get rich by just, oh, hey, maybe someone, you know, dropped something, you know. Descartes, basically, he was fed up with people philosophizing midstream. And by that I mean, basically, jumping into the middle of philosophy just by the seat of your pants, you know, hoping to learn some kind of knowledge. And the sort of inquiry he was sort of against was this. You know, just imagine you're in college and one night your roommate's just like, dude, what do you think about, you know, God? Like, so, you know, just you bring up this issue. You haven't even discussed what Descartes would say. He's like, well, never mind God and whether he exists or not. We don't even know how to prove something. We don't even know what the standard of proof is. So we have to establish a basis for our knowledge before we even go gallivanting around asking about God. Or perhaps you could imagine, you know, late at night, your roommate, dude, would you kill, you know, 3 random dudes to save your mother's life? You know, and so Descartes would basically say, look, like, whatever your feelings on this is, whether you'd save your mother or, you know, kill random dudes, it's basically based on whatever your feelings are. You have some kind, you have whatever, how can you address a question like this when you have not even proven that morality, there is even a such thing as morality? How would you even prove that there's a such thing as morality before you've even proven what a standard of epistemology is, what your standard of true and false is, how you figure out whether you even have knowledge or not? Descartes wanted to put an end to this random groping and systematize our thought process, make everything clear and certain. Descartes recognized the need to delve as deeply as possible to avoid this gallivanting. One of his fundamental goals was to wipe out all of his unproven assumptions and use only ideas that he was totally certain of. This could be found in his next rule. Rule number 5, quote, "Method consists entirely in the order and disposition of the objects towards which our mental vision must be directed, if we are to find out any truth. We shall comply with it exactly if we reduce involved and obscure propositions step by step to those that are simpler, and then starting with the intuitive apprehension of all those that are absolutely simple, attempt to ascend to the knowledge of all others by precisely similar steps." Unquote. In other words, we got all this complicated stuff, all these complicated ideas that we don't even have proof for, you know, saying that, you know, you shouldn't save your mother in the, you know, the moral case, or, you know, trying to have a proof of God, you know, all these things. These are complicated truths. We need to figure out what were the basic, simple truths that we know we're certain of, and then deduce our way into these other truths, if we're to even find that they're true at all. We need to reduce things down to things that we're absolutely certain of so that we know we're not making any unchosen assumptions. You can't just, you know, dive into a moral argument and say, oh, that's messed up to kill 3 people, even if it's for your mother. You know, you can't just say that. That's just your feelings. And what are your feelings based on? Your assumptions. They're based on your assumptions of what's right and wrong. We don't want to drag any unchecked assumptions into our methodology. And so Descartes says, reduce what you know down to only those things you're certain of, and deduce from there. Try and figure out what you can once you've reduced things to everything you're certain of. And this sounds very reasonable, but there's a crucial error hidden within it, and we will get into that as we explore Descartes. Descartes was a very clear thinker, a genius, in fact, that he thought that, you know, he was able to see these problems in such a clear light. And he followed this system, this prescription he lays out in his 5th rule, to the letter. In order to adhere to this strict regimen, he started by doubting all of his premises. He, in effect, said, "I know that my senses are capable of error, so I will not trust them. I will assume that I'm under the influence of some kind of evil demon who is always deceiving me." In other words, he was basically saying, I'm going to assume that I could be in the Matrix right now. I'm going to assume that everything that I sense with my eyes and my ears is just some kind of illusion that's been perpetrated on me. I will assume that my senses have not told me a damn thing about the real reality. Descartes did not literally think there was a demon, but the demon is a stand-in, a symbol for the fact that at all times it is conceivable that our senses and even our reason has erred. Descartes went so far as to even doubt the idea that the angle sum of a triangle is 180 degrees. Some simple mathematical formula like this. He basically said, how do I know that the demon hasn't, you know, somehow broken into my mind and screwed with my mind as I'm going through the proof? As it stands now, I don't remember the proof that a triangle has to have 180 sides. Maybe I'm just misremembering. It's conceivable. We gotta blow it away. We have to doubt and get rid of any idea that could have been in error. I'm only going to rely on the stuff that I'm absolutely 100% positively, indubitably certain of. I don't even know if that's the proper use of the word indubitable, but Descartes was willing to go that far. Even anyway, so let's see. So he continues his philosophical journey through this dark mist of doubt. The world doesn't exist. My body doesn't even exist. I don't even know if my body exists. I don't even know if I exist. For all I know, the demon has deceived me into thinking that I exist, even though I don't. But wait. To be deceived, I must exist. This much is certain. I exist. The fact that I'm even thinking right now is proof enough that I exist. Cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore, I am. I know that at the very least, I am a thinking thing. This is the axiom, the first truth, the thing that is absolutely indubitable that Descartes was able to start with, that he thought he could derive the rest of his truths from. His own existence, based on the fact that he knows that he is thinking. Descartes calls this type of knowledge, this kind of logical intuition, clear and distinct. This comes from the epistemology of the Stoics, which we covered before, whom Descartes was a big fan of. As far as I can tell, a clear and distinct intuition basically means that the evidence is irresistible. It means that you cannot possibly think of the statement being untrue. In other words, you are able to silence any kind of conceivable doubt that may occur when contemplating this truth. Any doubt whatsoever that's even remotely conceivable has now been banished, and now it is clear and it is distinct. Or another way Descartes says it is, he says, it is made clear by the natural light, or it's manifest by the natural light. He had all these ways of saying it. So now Descartes has proven in his system the existence of the self, or at least his thoughts. You know, the body is not yet proven. For all he knows, he's just a floating wisp who's been fooled. He's a, you know, floating wisp of thought that's been fooled into thinking he has a body. But at the very least, he's a thinking thing. That much is indubitable so far. He then goes, and there's a lot of steps to this, but I'm basically going to condense the meditations, this epistemic work on first philosophy. I'm going to condense it into three parts. First, he proves the existence of the self. Next is a proof for the existence of God. Here's Descartes' proof for the existence of God. It's similar to the ontological argument that's by Anselm. It's similar insofar as God is sort of wished into existence by the virtue of his own definition, but it's not quite not. It's a little bit more. It's a little bit more convincing, I think. I mean, I'm not convinced by it, but it's. I think it's a better argument than the ontological argument. Here's the proof. Descartes says, I have this idea of a perfect being, a perfect God, a consciousness who is infinite in power, infinite in goodness, and infinite in loving kindness. And so it's indubitable to me that I at least have this idea. That I have the idea. And it is also indubitable that an effect cannot have more reality in it than its cause. Now, what the hell does that mean? He's saying that something, all things are created by something. When whatever created something couldn't have more attributes than the thing that created it. So, for example, a baby can't have the attribute of flight because he didn't gain that attribute from his mother. The baby has the attributes that came from the mother, and the mother before that, etc., 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 on up to Adam, on up to God himself. So, you know, and God, of course, has consciousness. That's where man gets consciousness. God, in other words, you know, Descartes doesn't believe that man's consciousness could have sprung forth from, you know, the primordial soup. I don't think he'd be against the idea of a primordial soup, but he would have said that, you know, man evolved as an animal, and then God would have beamed consciousness into man's mind, that basically consciousness can't just come from natural processes. It has to come from a consciousness. Otherwise, this violates the law of cause and effect in his mind. And this might seem kind of strange until you kind of look at it from his perspective. This is very archaic logic, but you can kind of see it from his perspective. Is basically, all he's saying is that you can't get something from nothing. You can't get consciousness from a cause that does not itself have consciousness. Because then it's just like, well, where the hell did the consciousness come from? It had to have come from somewhere. So Descartes applies this same idea to the idea of God. We have this idea of an infinitely good, infinitely powerful being. Well, this idea couldn't have come from anything that is less than the idea of a perfectly good, perfectly powerful being. Therefore, only a perfectly good, perfectly powerful being could have caused this idea, and therefore, and this thing is God. Therefore, this the fact that I think of God is evidence for the existence of God. It is solidly clear and distinct proof of the existence of God. It is indubitable, Descartes thought. Now, where he, how do we know that the demon isn't screwing with us when we accept this idea, this very loaded idea of cause and effect that Descartes puts before us? I don't know. He thought it was clear and distinct, though, so... Anyway, good deal. I don't mean to be so, I make these jokes, but I don't want to be disrespectful, especially to someone like Descartes. I think he's totally wrong, but like he's making an ambitious grab for total certainty, and he's really giving it his all, and you know, we got to give him credit for having balls like this and his sheer originality in trying to prove all this stuff. So God exists. Here's the third. There's a lot more to the meditations than this, but this is basically the third part of his argument. God is infinitely good by our definition that we've just proved his existence. An infinitely good being, an infinitely powerful being, would not allow us to be deceived. Would not allow us to think there was a material world if there was not one. And so, therefore, long story short, the material world exists. Descartes has to sweep up a few potential objections. You know, what about retarded people? What about crazy people? They're under a lot of delusions, illusions. How is it that God has allowed them to be under these illusions? He sweeps up these arguments and basically says and ends his meditation with the statement that the material world exists. Now, here's the first problem I'll give about this, is that we end with this, the fact the material world exists, and we're like, great, we've made it to the beginning then, man. You know, you've done this whole complicated deductive process. You're trying to make sure everything is proven and good and perfect and we're certain of it, and all you've gotten us is to square one. The material world exists. We're not going crazy. We're not dreaming. We're not in the Matrix. We just figured that out. And you know we figured this out by highly what's the word, dubious arguments, that you know, God exists, and if he does exist, all of a sudden he's not going to let us be fooled. It's and all of this is somehow clear and distinct. It's a stretch. But even if we accept this stretchy of stretchies, then we only get down to the material world. And so we have this entire deductive system to prove the existence of the material world. Now, if you remember any of the deductive proofs that you may have read in your math classes, your geometry classes, you'll remember that the concepts that you had to do in your homework in math probably became a lot easier once you understood the proof behind the concept you're supposed to apply. Usually you learn some kind of boxed formula, and then you apply that formula to a few problems. But if you really want to learn it well, what do? You look at the proof that led to that boxed formula. Once you look at the proof, you understand the context of where this knowledge came from. It's deeper meaning, and you get a deeper sense of what this little boxed formula means, of what it's supposed to apply to, of why it's true. So not only do you find out why it's true, but you also understand a lot more about it because of the proof. You'll notice that Descartes' proof of the external world tells us absolutely nothing about the nature of the external world itself. Descartes basically institutionalizes the rationalism of Plato to an even more hardcore extent. He's specifically said that we need a proof of the rational world. There's the world of the sense experience, and that's one thing, and there's the world inside. And the only thing that's indubitable is the world inside our own heads. And in order to prove the existence of external reality, we have to start by deducing it from our own ideas. We'll get into this later. Now, what happened when Descartes actually did try to examine the external world? It's kind of no surprise that he still, even when he started doing physics, for example, he did not lean upon observational evidence. In his physics, he tried to deduce principles of physics from first principles. He tried to take, sort of do the same thing he did in the meditations. He took a few axioms, deduced, until he came to specific physical conclusions. And if you're kind of, you know, giving me a weird face right now, because you're like, wait, what do you mean Descartes' physics? There isn't, you know, Newton's the one who came up with physics. Well, Descartes was actually a contemporary of Newton, and Descartes had his own ideas of physics, basically. He had his own theory of physics, and here's a few of the, you know, again, it's kind of funny, but like, oh, I want to be serious about what we can actually learn about this. Descartes came to some pretty bizarre-ass conclusions about physics that we've, you know, totally disregard today. For example, Descartes thought that light is a type of particle, and so that's more or less true, although it gets complicated with quantum mechanics, which I argue we don't quite understand. But anyway, Descartes, you know, correctly guessed that light is a particle, and he thought that the different colors of light were caused by different types of spins that could be imparted upon the particle. Which is certainly creative, and spin, particle spin does end up being a thing in physics, but has nothing to do with color. So that's certainly, you know, cool story, bro, but, you know, where the hell did that come from? Descartes thought that arrows are propelled through the air with a vortex. Basically, projectiles have some sort of rush of air that pushes them along. When, you know, now with Newtonian physics, we know that no continuous force is required to keep an arrow soaring through the air. An arrow, once launched, once given a speed, requires an opposite force to bring it to rest. Newton found with his observational laws, instead of, you know, Descartes' deductive laws, Newton found that it was, in fact, velocity that is the constant of the universe. Once an object has motion, it will retain that motion until a force acts upon it. In other words, you know, if you're floating out in space and you're floating at, you know, 20 miles an hour, how fast are you going to be floating a million years from now? Same damn speed, because nothing's getting in your way in space. There's no air resistance to slow you down. An arrow will slow down, but that's only because of the air resistance. There's no natural, there's no natural slowing force. And Descartes, because he wasn't focused on observations, he didn't notice this. Let's see. Now, when Newton actually, as we talked about last time, when Newton actually based his observations, or rather when Newton based his physics upon direct observational evidence, Descartes actually derided this. Descartes said, "Man, you haven't proven a damn thing. Because this is just based on, you haven't deduced anything from first principles. How do you know that your observations are even correct, that you're even interpreting them right, if you don't even have your first principles laid out?" And this is probably, I find this absolutely fascinating, because it's, nothing could be further from the scientific method that we've come to learn today as a modern society, but nothing could be more, I don't know, once you understand the argument, it's so compelling. How do you even know? You haven't even deduced it from first principles. We like the idea of being able to deduce something from some kind of more abstract principle. And that's the way Descartes wanted to do things, and it's quite contrary to the way Newton did things, and we know that Newton's has been much more efficacious, much more memorable, much more practical in today's world. Descartes even deduced his own theory of momentum. Basically, it's a theory of how collisions will occur between moving objects. And when he did, you know, a few experiments to see if his predictions worked, it didn't work out. But Descartes basically said, tough, world ain't perfect, but the way I deduced it is the way it should be. So you see this fundamental split between his theory, which is the way things should be based on his deductions, and practice, the way that things actually came out in experiment. A direct split, again, between reality and his mind. And just the mind in general. So, in the end, there were parts of Descartes' method that he still did take for granted. He took for granted that one should base everything on deductive reasoning. What this meant is that he felt the need to use deductive reasoning, to use ideas to validate the senses, instead of using the Aristotelian approach, which is that all ideas are based on testimony from the senses. Aristotle had a view that the senses are the raw data from which we draw generalizations. Descartes probably would have recognized the same thing, but he says we got to use, he found that we had to, his opinion was we got to use these ideas to prove the validity of the senses. So you see this fundamental reversal of the way I think things should be, and that this fundamental reversal that ideas are needed to prove the senses, not the other way around. And this idea lays at the heart of Descartes' epistemology. Even though these particular arguments that we went through with Descartes didn't end up being terribly influential, this idea that the external world needs to be proven through ideas was wildly influential. And it grew to this idea grew into massive proportions that probably would have horrified Descartes. He, in effect, created a philosophical monster. Descartes never wanted to live in a world where philosophers basically, you know, always doubted the existence of... he never wanted to live in a world where all philosophers basically, you know, have no knowledge, claim to have no knowledge of the physical world of sense perception. He wanted to prove sense perception, but the method he went about trying to prove it was doomed from the outset. Because all of our ideas are based on sensory data, if you go about trying to prove sensory data using ideas, this is an absolutely hopeless process, because it has to, any attempt to prove the external world using ideas is going to end up resulting in some kind of circular reasoning, whether the reasoner realizes it or not. And Descartes' intellectual progeny ended up following his same method, but they used different processes and eventually ended in total skepticism. No one was able to prove the existence of the outside world using this approach. And the result was the total destruction of knowledge, a total return to the sort of Pyrrhic Greek skepticism we talked about that led to the destruction of Greek culture before the start of the Roman Empire. For this reason, the rest of the history of philosophy is more or less a... okay, we're taking a break. And now we're coming back. 3, 2, 1. Descartes was allegedly really, really concerned with the burden of proof principle. He did not want to believe anything until he had absolutely no doubt in it, until he had totally fulfilled the burden of proof to the nth degree. But really, the burden of proof has to be cast upon some of his doubts. And here's what I mean. This is, he's Descartes' system of doubt destroys the outside world because he brings in completely unreasonable doubt, as opposed to the reasonable doubt we may hear of in a court of law. Here's what I mean. In a court of law, the defendant is considered innocent until proven guilty. Why is this? Is because of, basically, the burden of proof principle. If you are asserting the existence of something, then it is incumbent upon the person asserting the positive, asserting this is an idea, this is an existent, it is incumbent upon that person to prove the existent. The default position is to not believe it. So, for example, you say there is God, the default position is to not believe in God, and so it is up to the religious to prove the existence of God. The burden of proof lies with them. The burden of proof does not lie on me to disprove the idea of God. So what Descartes is actually doing when he casts his doubts is he's actually, when he says, we doubt, we have reasons to doubt the senses because for all I know there's this evil demon deceiving me. Is it conceivable that I'm in the Matrix? Yes. Is there any positive evidence that I am? No. So Descartes actually brings in doubt that requires the burden of proof principle, that has this burden of proof laid upon it, that he simply does not meet. He introduces, in effect, arbitrary doubt, which, as we discussed, destroys the outer world and leaves philosophy in ruin for hundreds of years to come. But I don't want to be a downer. The Enlightenment is still has a lot more achievements to come with its newfound, albeit crippled, sense of rationality. And we'll continue our journey through the Enlightenment.